Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Welcome to another edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I am Pat Johnston, and last week I ended the show asking, hey, what else could happen? Well, it turns out a lot, actually. Hey, stay tuned for my Left of Lansing last call because I'm going to take Teamsters President Sean O'Brien to task for speaking at the Republican National Convention. I'm not really against what he said for the most part, but he spoke to an audience and spoke to a party that doesn't care about him, doesn't care about workers or workers in general. So stay tuned for that. But as you all know, of course, there was an assassination attempt on former President Trump while he held a rally in Butler, Pennsylvania, and that's on the western side of the state. Trump apparently got nicked on the ear with either a bullet or a piece of a possible shattered teleprompter. We're not sure because, unlike with President Biden, the press isn't following up over and over and asking what exactly happened to Donald Trump. But regardless, he did come about an inch or two from losing his life. Now, one person did die that day. His name, Corey Compitore. He was age 50. He died while shielding his wife and two children. Two other people were also shot, but they are listed in stable condition, although one of them reportedly sustained what is being called life-altering injuries. They were shot by a 20-year-old named Thomas Matthew Crooks, who was immediately killed after firing some shots at Trump. And there are many, many questions that will be answered, like how did Secret Service not secure the structure where the shooter fired? Now, what were the exact motives of the shooter? What were some of the other security errors? And on and on and on. But here's what we do know. The shooter was a registered Republican. We know he used his father's AR-15 rifle. We know that his dad was profiled by the Trump campaign as a swing state voter in 2016 and who was likely to respond favorably to pro-gun messaging, and that's what's being reported by the UK's Channel 4 News. We know one local police officer checked the roof where the shooter was getting ready to fire his shots, and once the shooter pointed his rifle at the officer immediately backed off, but that did cause the shooter to hurry his shots, which may have helped save Trump's life. So good job there by the police. We also know there have been some MAGA-supporting signs and paraphernalia at the shooter's parents' home, although it's being said maybe not recently, according to some neighbors, that still is a little fuzzy. Now, there's all kinds of speculation of what happened. I've seen people speculate that he was bullied in school, while others say he was not bullied in school. I've seen people wonder if he was like the killer in the South Carolina Baptist church shooting, and maybe hope that by killing Trump, he could ignite a civil war. And the scary thing is, had Trump not turned his head at that second to read some numbers off a screen during another one of his racist and deranged anti-immigration rants, I fear that there could have been more violence across the country had he not turned his head for that one moment. Or maybe this was just another lonely white male who wanted to make a name for himself before ending his own life. We don't know exactly, and that will all get revealed in due time. But here's what we do know. Since this was done by a young white male, the MAGA Republican Party are kind of stuck in knowing what to do or what to say. Oh, sure. They're trying to say it was the political rhetoric of the left that caused the shooting, and they're to blame for all the kinds of the political violence that we're seeing. But everyone, you know better. That's not matching up with the facts. I mean, can you imagine if the shooter had been an immigrant from Central or South America, or if the shooter had been a drag queen immigrant? I mean, they would have had their boogeyman or person, and they would have been using that nonstop during their little convention happening this week in Milwaukee. But there's still a little bit more to it. You see, Trump was nearly killed by a weapon the MAGA Christian nationalist movement idolizes, the AR-15. We've seen them wear their little AR-15 lapel pins. I mean, they do it for the most part because they want to own the libs. But here in Michigan, while Democrats and Governor Whitmer responded to some of the mass shootings that we've experienced here in our state by passing expanded background checks, safe storage laws, red flag laws, and making it more difficult for domestic abusers to get their hands on guns, Republicans here in Michigan proposed making the AR-15 the official state rifle, again, to own the libs. Now, I have to admit, I didn't know there was such a thing. Now, the bill was introduced by Representative Brian Bigol, who is from Antrim Township and who was also a former sheriff of Shiawassee County. And, you know, I have to say, that's a little strange considering that police across the state and across America support a reinstatement of the National Assault Weapons Ban. It will help save their lives. But Brian Bigol says, I don't care. I mean, he said in a statement on why he wants to glorify this military assault weapon, and he said, and I quote, millions of people across the country and thousands in Michigan own an AR-15. This distinction recognizes these law-abiding gun owners who are often vilified just for having a firearm as a hobbyist or to keep their homes and family safe. Well, did that rifle keep the people at that rally safe? You see, their glorification of the AR-15 shows how they care more about the gun itself than the people it kills in quick fashion. But you're hearing silence on the AR-15 at the Republican National Convention this week. Nothing is being said about it. Gun violence and shootings in crowded areas are becoming so commonplace nowadays in America that we just move on with our lives. I mean, so much so that Republicans still held their convention just 2 days after the shooting, and they aren't saying a word about the gun because they treat the AR-15 as some kind of religious artifact. They value it actually more than they value their dear leader, and I didn't think that was possible. And then there's all this Messiah equating or worshiping that's happening within the MAGA Republican circles when it comes to their dear leader surviving this assassination attempt. For example, here's MAGA Senator Roger Marshall talking about divine intervention in play while he was talking with Fox News' Maria Bartiromo. Listen.
All those people that were sitting on the fence, the Nikki Haley supporters, I think, and now many of those same people that have supported me in the past have been hesitant. Now they're saying, okay, I give up. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump is indeed the person. This assassinated him. It was divine intervention. We think that we're here today, Maria, making history. Don't you feel like that we're making history this week?
Well, this is just one example out of many. And it's a sick way of looking at that tragic event because, as Michigan GOP Watch said in their response on Twitter to this video, they said, and I quote, with divine intervention, God spared Trump, but allowed the round to take out a dad in front of his family? Got it. I mean, I tweeted this week that I wonder what in the world Lincoln or Kennedy did wrong not to receive that kind of so-called divine intervention. Maybe according to these white Christian nationalists, Lincoln did wrong by ending slavery, and JFK did wrong by proposing civil rights. I mean, DEI after all, right? But that's what white Christian nationalism is all about, preserving the white patriarchy. And these people see Trump as an ally, as someone who will help progress their cause of bringing America back to those good old days, hence their Make America Great mantra. And they're hoping this shooting will deter and shame we progressives from showing our disdain for another Trump term. And they hope to squash our ability to dissent. And they hope that the corporate media will assist them in that effort. I'd like to thank many of you, a number of you, who listened to this week's Monday Musing. And for those of you who also listened to and liked it on YouTube, if you haven't heard it, please check it out. But in it, I talk about how many MAGA Republicans, including MAGA Michigan crazy Congresswoman Lisa McClain, blame the left for the shooting. I mean, they actually tried to blame the left for the shooting, and also how the now vice presidential pick, Ohio Senator J.D. Vance, how he also did the same. They tried to blame everything on the left, even though this appears early on to be Republican on Republican crime. And they have the gall to blame us while they've been the ones practicing and pressing this kind of political rhetoric and violence. I mentioned how Michigan MAGA Republicans, egged on by state Republican leaders and state Chamber of Commerce members at that time, how they held that anti-COVID protection measures rally at the state capitol in 2020, brandishing guns, waving Confederate flags, holding anti-Governor Whitmer signs, which read, "Tyrants get the rope and hail Whitmer." It provided a blueprint for MAGA to stage the January 6th insurrection, which injured, by the way, many police officers while threatening to kill Trump's former vice president. Hey, by the way, what's his name again? You don't hear about him anymore nowadays. I wonder why. Hey, maybe the media would ask Trump about that. You know, I'm just saying. But it's the left who's to blame for the shooting? Because we point out the authoritarian goals of the MAGA movement and how Project 2025 will damage lives and the fabric of this country? Sorry, but that's the truth. But unlike MAGA, we kind of like to do things a bit more by the book, you know, like through fair elections, something that MAGA Republicans don't believe in, thanks to the rhetoric of their dear leader. Let me just read the beginning of this CBS News story in case you forgot it, and this is just from a couple of months ago. An Indiana man has been sentenced to 14 months in prison for sending death threats to a Michigan election worker following the 2020 election. On November 10th, 2020, Andrew Nichols, age 38, of Carmel, contacted a local municipality's clerk and left them a voicemail in which he threatened to kill them. In part of the voicemail, Nichols said, "We're watching your blank mouth talk about how you think that there's no regularities. You frauded out America of a real election." He also told that local official, "You're going to pay for it," and described how 10 million plus patriots will surround you when you least expect it. In the message, he also said, "We'll bleeping kill you. You will bleeping pay for your bleeping lying ass remarks. We will bleeping take you out. Bleeping your family, bleeping your life, and you deserve a bleeping throat to the knife. Watch your bleeping back. Watch your bleeping back." That's the byproduct of MAGA Republicanism, right there. It's the same bullying, the same violent rhetoric we've been hearing for years. We know all too well about the kidnapping plot against Governor Whitmer. We know last year how a man was arrested for posting threats on YouTube against Whitmer, as well as FBI agents, President Joe Biden, and members of the LGBTQ plus community. And as Barbara Rodriguez wrote on the political news site the 19th last year, she said, and I quote, "Experts on political violence say women, and particularly women of color, are disproportionately impacted by threats of harassment and political violence. Some recent incidents have been linked to election denialism and others to white supremacist movements, which object to women, people of color, and people who are not Christian in public life." Again, the same people making these threats are listening to their leaders blame immigrants, blame equality, blame transgender Americans, or blame women in order to stoke fear and resentment. And to show it, they'll storm Capitol buildings, wave Confederate flags, argue to keep Confederate statues, and show allegiance to a weapon than to our democracy. And while the corporate media are lecturing progressives and Democrats to be civil, which side is chanting, "Fight! Fight! Fight!" This is not a both sides issue, and these threats are meant to do one thing and one thing only: scare those of us on the progressive side from speaking out against MAGA extremism and for supporting freedom. One of those people who refuses to be afraid and cowered by the right wing is Jody Decker. She's running once again for the State House seat in the 107th District, which runs in the northern Lower Peninsula up to the Mackinac Bridge and up to Sault Ste. Marie. Right now, this district is home to your friend and mine, MAGA Republican Neil Friske, who recently got arrested for allegedly chasing an exotic dancer around with a gun. Now, Friske also voted against ending child marriage. He voted against that, voted against non-consensual AI porn, which includes child porn, voted against red flag laws, voted against expanded voting rights, voted against abortion rights, voted against working families, voted against unions, voted against teachers, and more. He said in 2022 that he was running to fight to preserve our God-given liberties, which I guess to him includes child marriage. Now, he's in a tough primary battle against a person named Parker Fairbairn. But while that's happening, Jody Decker is running to give voice to those needing a strong progressive voice, someone who's got a strong common sense voice, someone they know who will do the job for them rather than just use the position to grandstand for herself. Jody Decker is my guest, and she's coming up right after these words. You're listening to LOL.
It's Michigan's premier progressive podcast, Left of Lansing with Pat Johnston. If Pat's brand of progressive pontifications is getting you all riled up and you'd like to give him a piece of your mind, or if you'd like to tell him he's doing an outstanding job and to keep up the great work, just email him. That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Do you have stories you think Pat must know about or guest ideas for future episodes? That's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Want to share your thoughts on how to grow Michigan's population or which flavor of Faygo Pop is the best? It's Rock and Rye, by the way. Just email Pat, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Now, here's Pat.
I'd also like to remind you to subscribe to Left of Lansing, where you get your podcast. But please subscribe to Left of Lansing on YouTube as well. I'm beginning to put some videos on there, including content that doesn't necessarily get included in all the podcasts. And I just have to remind you, too, that subscriptions are important to keep this little venture going on. So please, please, please make sure to subscribe. And if you ever want to contact me, that's leftoflansing@gmail.com. Well, we've been talking about a certain Republican politician from the 107th House District recently. And while Neil Friske is busy bringing chaos to his district, there's a Democrat who's running to simply do the everyday work for the everyday people that she wants to represent and who just really wants to help improve the lives of those living in her district. Her name is Jody Decker, and she's my guest on this week's episode of Left of Lansing. Jody, thanks so much for being on.
Thank you for having me.
All right. I believe the 107th district starts from around the Charlevoix area, roughly, and then extends what, northeast up into the UP all the way up to Sault Ste. Marie. Am I kind of on the right track there?
You're in the right area. Yeah.
All right.
Sault Ste. Marie. So I always say it starts up in Chippewa County. I have most of Mackinac County, all of Emmett County, all of Charlevoix County, and Mackinac Township in Sheboygan County, and all the islands.
We've been through parts of your district recently, and it's beautiful country up there, and also surrounded by a few of the Great Lakes. But tell me about the people there and why you would like to represent them.
Well, I've been a lifelong Uper, and up here, we help each other. If you see somebody stuck in a snowbank, you stop and help. That's what I love about the UP. Northern Lower Michigan is pretty well the same. I mean, we're very close. Obviously, we're in the same district. So the people are all, they're awesome.
I read in your bio, too, that you grew up in the Escanaba area first. Is that right?
Yes.
And I've been covering that area a bit this year as three Republican county commissioners were ousted in some recall elections last May. And one of the recall challengers who won, Democrat Kelly Van Genhoven, she told me here on the podcast, people just want to know that they're being heard, but also that people up there were voting for change because it wasn't necessarily left versus right, but right versus wrong. Do those results, Jody, in Delta County give you some hope that your voters in your district will react in a similar way, that it's not so much a left and right issue, it's more of a right versus wrong issue?
I'm hopeful. That's how I look at things as well, right and wrong. I have a very strong sense of right and wrong, and that led me to getting a degree in corrections, criminal justice. All the latest elections have given me a little hope.
What made you want to get into criminal justice, Jody?
I actually had gotten laid off from my job in 2008, and then I went back to school, and I was thinking, you know, where can I get a job that I can make close to what I was making before, because I'd been at my previous job for almost 15 years. And I thought, well, I'll be a corrections officer. So I went back to school for that.
All right. And then what happened?
Well, I ended up being a social worker because it's a human services degree. So it qualifies for a lot of different jobs. I've worked for a juvenile justice program through Teaching Family Homes, which is the main offices in Marquette. Now I work for UP Kids and their main offices in Houghton. But we cover five counties of the UP here, and that's for doing family preservation. Like when kids are going to be removed for foster care, we go in to try to prevent it, or we go in when they're being returned from foster care to reunify.
And how long have you been with UP Kids again?
Almost 7 years.
What kinds of experiences have you gained working there. And is that helping shape your overall candidacy here for the state house race?
Yeah, I advocate for families. I find resources for them. I work with a lot of like Community Action, Habitat for Humanity, all the different programs to help families get what they need. And so advocating for people came natural to me, so I could advocate for a bigger group.
Are you advocating also for a group that really doesn't have much of a mouthpiece, you could say? I mean, it's not like they can buy the best lobbyists, right? You know, I'm not trying to be flippant about it, but that's true, right?
That's true. There's not a lot of help in the UP for candidates. See, I ran in the 22 election also. So this is my second cycle. And I ran because I watched the insurrection happen. We all watched the insurrection happen. I was watching it happen as it actually was live, and I couldn't believe it. And then I waited and I thought, well, something's got to happen now. Something's got to happen, and nothing happened and nothing happened. So I felt like I needed to do something. And I got a hold of our local Democrat party, asked if we had candidates running in for everything. And I was originally just going to help a candidate maybe, but then they asked me if I'd run.
Did you have any trepidation running that first time?
Well, I had no idea what I was doing. But I went to a couple meet and greets and met some of the other candidates that were running. Dr. Bob and Barb Connolly was running for the Senate at the time. And they were just like, do it.
Yeah, we had Dr. Bob Lawrencer on a few weeks ago. Of course, he's running for Congress on the Democratic side against Republican Jack Bergman. And so, yeah, you ran in 22. You lost to Republican Frisky. Neil Frisky. Yeah, we'll talk more about him here in a second. But still, here you are. You're saying that pretty much didn't know what to expect. You were a newcomer to this whole thing. Yet, if I'm reading the data correctly, you still garnered somewhere around 43% of the vote. And that was just your first time running, really without much of an infrastructure. So in a way, is that a reason why you decided to run again? Because now you kind of have a better idea what to expect. And you think that those numbers can really improve?
Yeah, I think I can improve my numbers. For me, feeling how I was feeling to get into the race in the first place over the insurrection, and I consider myself to be patriotic. Mm-hmm. My grandparents, both my grandfathers were in World War II, and my opponent's father was an actual Luftwaffe and flew for Germany in World War II. So I felt like I was like battling for my grandparents.
Yeah.
And I got calls after the 22 election asking me what I had done differently. I didn't realize I had gotten more votes in my district than any other candidates had. Mm-hmm. On the Democratic side. So I thought, well, let's try this again.
You mentioned the word patriotism there. I'm not trying to make this into some kind of seminar class or anything like that, but I was just wondering if I could get your feelings and your takes on how it makes you feel that the other side has taken ownership of that word, patriotism, when many of their actions and many of their policies are anything but patriotic. I'm just wondering if I could get your take on that.
Well, we've talked about taking back the flag, actually. Not necessarily the word patriot, but because I noticed when knocking doors, it was mostly Trump supporters that had the flag out, and you didn't know what to expect when you knocked on a door with a flag. And I thought, this is BS. Like, I have a flag.
Right.
I shouldn't be worried about people that have a flag. They're our neighbors. Mm-hmm. But I did have a lot of people that were nervous to put my yard sign out in their yard because they were afraid of what would happen to them. So that happens up here also. A lot of my signs disappear.
Are you saying that people are sometimes worried about any kind of harm?
Repercussions that they'll get, yeah, for showing that they're a Democrat.
Well, since we're here, I guess I will ask you the following question. In my monologue, I talked about the assassination attempt last weekend on former President Trump, but I have not liked how it seems like many MAGA Republicans at first went after Democrats and went after progressives, saying, you guys are the reason why all this happened. It's your rhetoric. Now, of course, we're learning different things about the shooter and the shooter's family, which is showing that this really didn't have anything to do with our rhetoric, which, yeah, I will agree, maybe at times, maybe it can be a little bit overboard, but nowhere to the extent, in my opinion, as what we have seen from the right here over the last 8 years. So I guess my question, Jody, then is that something that has just popped up, or is it something that was always there as far as you can remember?
First, I noticed it was in the 22 election. Yeah, I hadn't really noticed it before that. Of course, before that, I wasn't really very political.
Did you become more political because of the insurrection? Was that what ultimately galvanized you to want to get into the game?
I mean, I paid attention, but I guess when, I don't know, I felt when Trump was elected, I kind of tried to block it off. And then when COVID hit and the, oh, put your bleach in your arm or the whatever the different medications where they were suggesting to use that had no use for COVID. Yeah, I started paying attention a lot more.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about some of the issues that you really want to focus on here during your campaign and what you would like to really push once you get into Lansing. I know that you've spent a lot of your time, as you've already talked about, dealing with families and children. You've been a foster parent. I know that foster parent reform is something you like to press if you get into Lansing. So, Jody, what kinds of reforms are you talking about exactly?
Well, I've said I've been a foster parent. I was a foster parent for 7 years, and now I work on the other side in the foster system. I've seen a lot of things that could be changed and tweaked to make the system work better. Boring stuff you wouldn't notice if you weren't like right there in it, but we need more foster homes, first of all. We need to incentivize people to open their homes to take in kids, because a lot of times there's nowhere to even put them if they are removed from their home. We need more streamline the court system, because I deal in 5 counties in the UP, and the laws are all the same, but they're utilized in different ways in different counties. So, like, you know, making that more so that all the judges will follow, you know, the same kind of rules, getting more foster parents involved, supporting more grandparents. I became a foster parent because I've got my own grandchild. He was removed from my daughter. She was only 17 when she had him. So I ended up becoming a foster parent to get him originally. I found out then that grandparents have no rights in the state of Michigan. So advocating for more grandparent rights so that they can step in before the system has to take over, I think would be beneficial.
When you said just getting more foster parents, are there some maybe incentives that you're looking at to see if there are ways to get people to incentivize them to maybe want to become a foster parent?
Oh, you know, the one everybody always wants is the tax credits. When you get a foster child, you get nothing with them. They usually come with the clothes on their back, and you have to supply everything for them. And then sometimes the state will reimburse you depending on what it is or what they need. But you have a big expense coming right on board. You might have to buy a new bed, or if it's a baby, you have to get a crib or formula, diapers, you know, all that stuff. And so just having something in place to help the foster parents to cover those expenses would probably open more doors, because I don't think people think about that. Like, I've had kids show up, like a worker bring a child that I'm taking in and with nothing but the dirty clothes he's wearing. And then I've got to run to the store and buy this kid everything that he needs for however long he's going to be with me. So it's an upfront expense.
You know, Jody, I mean, everything that you're talking about in trying to take care of these foster kids, it seems like it's needed, very important, and it's a pro-life agenda. I don't know. That's just one way of looking at it for me. Oh, go ahead. No, please. Go right ahead. Go right ahead.
Well, I always say they're not very pro-life. You know, they're pro-birth. They want women to have babies, no contraception. They wanted to get rid of the contraception, the IVF. They want no abortions, but they don't want to help pay for medical care or child care or, you know, the bridge card or whatever it is in their state, you know, to get food assistance. I mean, kids aren't cheap and they're not free. So if they don't want to support them after they're born, how can you be pro-life?
Something I've been talking about here a lot there, actually, is what you just said there. And I guess this would lead me to my next question. Last week, I had on Democratic State Representative Carrie Reingans. She's from the Ann Arbor area. And we talked about how there's this paid family leave bill that's been kind of languishing in the state house. And she said one of the reasons why this election is so important is not only do Democrats have to keep control of the state house, but if they could increase their numbers in the state house, that would make the likelihood of a paid family leave bill passing, because right now Democrats only have a 2-seat advantage. And so an extra vote like yours, Jody, in the state house might be the push to get that kind of bill passed. Would you support a paid family leave bill that provides up to 15 weeks of paid leave?
I could get behind that. Yes, I could.
Yeah. Well, and I would guess just dealing with your life's work, basically, you could see how something like that could really benefit many families.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I know that the issue of public transportation is something that you've also focused on. I know in 22 that you talked a lot about it as well, but, and I've been talking about it here, especially this past year since state Democrats are working on diverting some of the money that's in that corporate SOAR fund and shifting it to public transit and housing. That's, nothing has passed yet. But I feel like that whenever the issue of public transit is brought up, and I'm to blame for this myself, so I'll put myself out there, but I think that people automatically think of the more highly populated areas of the state, like the Metro Detroit region, obviously. But it could improve the lives of many people in rural areas, and that being public transportation. How could an expansion of public transportation really help people in your district, let's say?
Well, again, I'll use the UP part of my district because I'm right here. But so we have all these little towns outlying, like Sault Ste. Marie is the bigger town here. Then you've got like Rudyard, Kinross, Kinchelow, Pickford, Cedarville, Detour, and all the islands. If you don't have a car or a transportation, all these littler towns need to get into the Sioux or somewhere else below the bridge, maybe to grocery shop. And medical transportation is a major thing up here, especially because we don't have a lot of the specialty doctors like they have below the bridge. I've been having trouble getting people into a dentist up here because none of our dentists will take Medicaid anymore. So raising what Medicaid pays might get them to, you know, take it back. And then that would help with a lot of the problem with that up here. But I've had to drive people like to Helen DeVos Hospital in Grand Rapids or C.S. Mott's in Ann Arbor. And we just don't have the programs for medical transportation for people that need cancer care and need to go downstate. And they don't have a car, they don't have a driver's license, or, you know, a family member that can take them. We need a program for medical transportation so that people can get to their doctor's appointments.
And I think that's just an issue that many people sometimes don't even think about, especially
a lot of my clients don't have a driver's license, so I deal with that a lot. And housing, that's another major issue. And it's a major issue in the entire state. But here in Sault Ste. Marie, we're being bombarded because we have the Sioux Locks project going on, which is going to go on for years. And all these out-of-state workers are coming and our housing prices have doubled. It's kind of crazy how like the prices of houses have gone up and rent has gone up and everything else with it.
That is interesting because I guess somebody from, I live in the mid-Michigan area, Gratiot County. And when the news broke about the Sioux Locks and new funding, I was thinking, you know, that's great news. And it is great news, obviously,
right,
all the work that's happening up there. But I didn't think about the byproducts of what that could mean for housing and for renting. That I didn't think about how that could jack up the prices.
It's going to get worse here because in the last year, they put some FEMA housing out in Kinchelow to house some of the workers. And I think they said there was enough for 75 the first year. And then there's supposed to be another 75 this year. But next year, there's supposed to be another 400. So I'm not sure where they're putting all these people.
What would you, if Jody Decker gets into the state house and the issue of housing comes up, what are some solutions that you would really like to advocate for?
We had a proposal on our ballot last year. Our school system wanted to build a new elementary school. And then the two elementary schools that we had that were outdated were going to be sold off. And those were going to be made into housing tracts. And that was an awesome idea, but it got voted down. So that's, it might be on the ballot again this year. I'm not sure. We definitely need some more subsidized housing up here. I would think below the bridge also. I didn't see a lot when I was knocking doors. And I know it's more expensive to live down below the bridge, which is the reason that I stay up here. But it kind of evens out, I think, because you have to buy gas to get anywhere. And anywhere from here, we travel at, like, how many hours we're going. Where are you going? Where is that? How far is that? It's 3 hours, 5 hours.
Which
I guess the cost is about the same because you got to pay for transportation from up here.
Right. Well, I mean, which is why public transportation, as we just talked about, is a huge, huge need up there. Another important issue, Jody, I know it's something that you focused on in 22 and are once again focusing on it here in 24, is rural broadband.
Yes. So,
what are you hearing from your constituents, from your voters up there? I'm hoping that they're going to be your constituents soon. I do. That's why you're here. What are you hearing and what would you fight to see happen to make sure that there's more broadband access and why that would be so critical for the areas?
Well, we saw during COVID, a lot of the outlying areas here don't have internet. Like there's a lot of dead spots where even when I'm driving with my cell phone, I have no cell service or internet access. A lot of the people in the outlying areas, like out in the country, out in Pickford or Cedarville or wherever it may be outside of the city, they just don't have internet or they don't have a computer or whatever it may be. But we saw a lot of people parking in the school parking lot to get on Wi-Fi with their kids' computers from school just to be able to do their schoolwork, or sitting in a McDonald's parking lot to get their Wi-Fi. Well, it's not fair for the students. They just don't have the access. I've offered my services to let everybody know where all the dead areas are, because I do travel five counties here pretty regularly, and I'm from the West End. So,
right. And that's why I was asking. You would have a pretty good idea. Well, listen, we just have a few moments left. Let's talk about Neil Frisky, if you don't mind. Of course, now he's in his own primary battle, so we don't know exactly what's going to happen there. But let me just first ask you this. When you ran against Frisky in 22, were you aware of his extremism?
No, I wasn't. Well, I knew he was endorsed by Trump, so I figured it was there.
Yeah.
But he hit it a little better. I didn't really have a lot to deal with him directly. I mean, other than at events that we were at together. So I didn't really pay much attention.
What do you think now?
Well, now he's a member of the Freedom Caucus or the secretary of it or whatever. That was another reason why I think he's got to go.
Yeah, he is part of that ultra right wing faction. Yeah, the Freedom Caucus. And
yes. And apparently the Michigan Conservative PAC wants him to stay in office because they just sent out a mailer ripping up Fairbairn. So I'm kind of staying out of that. I'm letting them battle it out for the primary.
Oh, yeah, right. Right. No, I get that. You know, I think I read somewhere where he said that he and his fellow people in that Freedom Caucus in the State House, that they're bent on blocking, quote unquote, bad stuff from passing. And I guess, according to him, one of the bad things is some of the gun safety laws that Democrats passed in the State House last year. And he's been really critical of one of those laws, the red flag law, that basically allows a judge to remove a firearm from someone who's a threat to other people or themselves. And that law is being utilized by authorities across the state now, and it's helping protect people and protect just people from themselves sometimes. But Frisky but he's against it. I have to believe that that kind of extremism, even on an issue like that, is something that voters in your district simply don't want. I mean, I understand. I get it. Gun ownership, big issue. But when it comes to red flag laws or stopping domestic abusers from obtaining weapons, which is another law that Gretchen Whitmer signed into law, I've got to think that many people in your district would tend to be on your side than they would be on the Republican side with that issue, right?
Not necessarily.
No?
Well, you got to remember where I'm at. The Wolverine Watchmen are not that far from here. Hmm. The militia group. They're right down by, well, in Wolverine. Yeah, up here, I did hear a lot about, oh, you're a Democrat, you're going to try to take my guns. And I'm a youper. I'm a lifelong youper. I'm not trying to take your guns. Like, we hunt, we fish, we do all that. And nobody wants to take your guns. I don't believe that we need AR-15s. I don't think there's any reason to have those in civilized society. You can't hunt with them. The only purpose of them is to kill. That I would vote for a ban on those. But as far as, you know, regular guns that people have day to day, I do believe in the safe storage law and the red flag law. And in fact, I did go, Frisky had a Second Amendment town hall at a gun shop in Petoskey right before those laws took effect. And I went to it and he had no idea what the laws were even about. I had to correct him several times during the town hall. And he actually, before he knew I was sitting there, he actually said that he doesn't even read the bills. He just votes no. So
is that right? He doesn't even read them. He just votes no. So if it has a D next to it, he just won't vote for it no matter what then. All right. And you know, he also joined those five other Republicans in opposing a ban on child marriage under the age of 18. That included the elimination of the parental exception in Michigan. Can I just get your reaction just to that kind of vote?
Of course, I'm totally opposite from what he voted. Yeah. He's voted for a lot of bad things. I should have made a list of them, actually. Yeah, that was kind of surprising that he'd come out against that. That's another thing I've noticed a lot, too, that they kind of project. They blame Democrats for being pedophiles, and that then you find a Republican getting arrested for being a pedophile. I don't expect anything from him, so I'm not disappointed.
Could I just ask you the question? I know that the investigation into whatever happened with Frisky down in Lansing is still happening. He has not been charged with anything as of yet. But can I just get your reaction to that news and maybe also what you've been hearing from others in your district when that news broke?
Well, the Democrats were happy. I actually started getting a little more help with volunteers and in donations. So that was good.
Oh, okay.
I've been getting a lot of questions asking, you know, why hasn't he been charged? Why'd they let him go? How did he get out of jail without being charged? Because we actually had a forum at North Central Michigan College like a couple days after he was released, where he addressed the elephant in the room and announced that he was happy to be out of jail. So I've been getting a lot of questions about why he was released. And I tell people, you know, they only have 48 hours to hold you without charging you. And once they charge you, you have the right to a speedy trial. So then the investigation closes. So they're going to investigate. And I imagine because he's a sitting representative that they're going to make sure they have a good case before they actually charge him. So I don't think it's over.
No, I don't think so either. I think you're right there, Jody. All right. Well, finally, this is a question that I've asked many of my rural Michigan Democrats here for the past year. And I like to finish by asking you the same question, if you don't mind. What would you tell fellow Democrats and progressives who live in rural areas across the state, like me, who sometimes feel despair that their voices aren't being heard? And maybe you have some advice for how people can maybe best organize and begin a forceful voice in areas that have been traditionally red for quite some time.
Well, the UP was actually blue a long time ago.
I know.
I would say get a hold of your Democratic Party, your county Democrat Party, and ask what you can do. They're always looking for volunteers. They're always looking for donations. They do fundraisers. There's all kinds of activities that they have. And they do a lot of volunteer work. Like each county I have does a highway garbage pickup. So, and they're always looking for volunteers for that. I would say just don't be afraid to let your voice be heard. I'm a single mom. I was kind of worried in 22 about going out campaigning, leaving my kids at home, even though my one is 22 years old. But I was afraid to leave them home because I thought, well, what if something happened to them? Because my address is kind of public knowledge now. And I set up a few cameras and eased my own mind and went on with my business. So just don't be afraid to let your voice be heard.
Good point there. Don't be afraid. Democratic state candidate for the 107th House District, Jody Decker, thank you so much for your time. Good luck to you. And maybe we could try to talk for a few minutes sometime before November. I'd love to have you back on.
Okay, thanks.
And visit Jody's website if you'd like to volunteer or contribute. That is votejodydecker.com. Back with more.
It's progressivism with passion. It's the Left of Lansing podcast, where Pat shines a light on Michigan's progressive movement. Contact Pat at leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Hey, 2 points I want to take from our discussion there is how Jody Decker wants to put more of a spotlight on improving foster care in the state and how she's pushing for funding upgrades in public transportation and housing in her district. And that's what struck me the most, because it's one thing to tee off on her MAGA representative like Neil Frisky, who isn't helping her district at all. But it's another thing to have actual goals and actual policies to present to the people, because it helps them realize and understand there's somebody who really just wants to represent them and help the place where they live. Again, Jody's campaign website is votejodydecker.com. Great talk there with Jody. Time now for the Left of Lansing last call. Teamster President Sean O'Brien made history this week by speaking in front of the Republican National Convention. After praising Trump as a tough SOB, as he called him, for surviving the assassination attempt, O'Brien gave a speech that is rarely heard in front of such a crowd that celebrates destroying unions while glorifying rich people as the quote-unquote successful ones in our country. And O'Brien lambasted corporations for exploiting their workers and politicians in D.C. who make it more and more difficult for workers to unionize. So that was kind of interesting to see. Never saw something like that before. But it was strange seeing Sean O'Brien of the Teamsters make that kind of speech in front of that kind of crowd, because Trump and MAGA Republicans want to slash corporate taxes down to around 18% while making the lives of working families more and more difficult. Now, look, I get that O'Brien's appearance was perhaps due in part, I'll keep it real, that he wants to remain in the good graces of Trump, or with Trump, if he happens to win the election in a few months. But to President Biden's credit, he's been one of the best, if not the best, presidents when it comes to unions. At least in my lifetime, he is. Biden stood on the picket lines for the UAW strike. He filled the National Labor Relations Board with pro-labor people, replacing them with the corporate stooges put there by Trump. He also passed the infrastructure bill, which benefited union families. He also saved the retirement accounts for 350,000 Teamster workers. And that's pretty important. And meanwhile, during the 4 years of Trump, He installed three Supreme Court justices who constantly backed big corporations and big money interest bent on destroying unions. He fought to end Obamacare, which would destroy the pocketbooks of millions of families. He didn't do a thing to raise the national minimum wage. He slashed the overtime pay for 8 million workers. He eliminated safety work rules. He never walked the picket lines with striking UAW workers last year. Instead, he spoke at an anti-union shop in Michigan. And other labor unions understand this reality that Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are no friends of unions. The Washington Post reported that Liz Shuler, president of the AFL-CIO, the country's largest federation of unions, said in a statement that although she agrees with O'Brien's critique of corporate greed, Donald Trump and J.D. Vance are on the boss's side. You think? I mean, Donald Trump relies on the billionaire Adelson family cash, while Vance relies on Silicon Valley billionaire Peter Thiel's cash. Real men of the people, let me tell you. But here in Michigan, Democrats support unions by passing policies that'll strengthen union members and their families. As state senator and friend of the podcast, Stephanie Chang reminded everyone this week, and I quote, "Reminder to working families, who restored the prevailing wage in Michigan? Democrats. Who repealed right to work for less in Michigan? Democrats. Who passed the working families tax credit in Michigan? Democrats. Who created a just transition office for our workforce and is increasing good-paying clean energy jobs in Michigan? Democrats. And who was the first president to visit workers on a picket line? President Biden." What we saw there at the Republican National Convention was all window dressing. They don't care about workers, and Michigan Republicans are no different. We progressives actually care about workers, while Trump MAGA Republicans care only about management. They represent management. I'll end this by quoting a Teamster union tweet, which was later removed, so good on whoever posted this, but it serves as a good reminder for Sean O'Brien and every union worker out there on just exactly who's on your side. And this was in response to a tweet by Missouri Republican Josh Hawley, who Sean O'Brien praised for some pro-union stances that he's taken in the Senate. And this is the tweet, and I quote, "Unions gain nothing from endorsing the racist, misogynistic, and anti-trans politics of the far right, no matter how much people like Senator Hawley attempt to tether such bigotry to a cynical pro-labor message. The message this sends to Teamsters of color, Teamster women, and LGBTQ Teamsters is that they are not welcome in the union unless they surrender their identity to a new kind of anti-woke unionism. You don't unite a diverse working class by scoffing at its diversity. Hear, hear."
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
Well, that's going to do it for this edition of the Left of Lansing. Special thanks to Democratic candidate for the 107th State House District, Jody Decker, for joining us. Next week, another bold progressive who's running to not only keep the State House blue next year, but who's also hoping to strengthen the Democrats' majority will join me. Sarah Mae Seward will be my guest as she's running for House District 51. Yes, that's Republican Matt Maddox's seat. And how awesome would that be if she could flip that seat to blue? Oh, that would be like the cherry on top. So that's happening next week. Thanks for listening. And if Detroit Tigers GM Scott Harris is listening, and I'm certain he is, don't you dare trade Tarek Skubal. Until next week, remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston. Written by Pat Johnston. Researched by Pat Johnston. Edited by Pat Johnston. And hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.